is March 15th, 2017, and this is episode number 402 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I seal things with wax. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Shiniest ceilings in the room.
Yes. The we're going to get back to that. We're going to get back to that a little bit later in the show. It's actually be one of the few times that my title pertains to something in the show.
Wait, it hasn't in the past?
Correct. It is not in the past. Believe it or not, we have not properly discussed hobos, trained engineers, clowns, rodeos,
scallywags,
pirates,
marsupials.
Yes, correct. We have not done that either. What show is this? It's 401?
402.
We've done 402 shows. Now, admittedly, some of those were before I came on the show, because Ricky Spiro started the show.
Yes, some of them were before I came on the show.
And then he brought you on, and then Ricky had to leave something about, you know, like getting a degree or something.
Yep, and blah, blah, blah. He has a life and a career, blah, blah, blah.
Right. And well, I miss Ricky, by the way. And,
so do I.
And it's Ricky's bass line you can still hear on the bumpers for the show.
Yeah. Ba-doo, ba-doo, right? Ba-doo, ba-doo, ba-doo. Yeah, that's all Ricky.
Anyway, so
variation on a theme. Point, just roll with it.
My point is, I think I've made up more than 300 titles.
That's impressive.
I believe this is the first one that actually is going to vaguely pertain to something that we actually talk about.
I'm just not even sure where to go with that.
Yeah, I know, it's weird. It's weird. All right, so. Listen, let's talk about what really matters, and that's the fact that Android sucks balls.
Yeah, I can tell you're already recording Pop.0 shows.
Yeah, I am. And you know what? You got me all fired up.
I did. I didn't mean to get you fired up. It just kind of happened.
It's possible I might have done a little firing up myself, but you know, whatevs. Whatevs. All right, so here's the deal. Here's the deal, folks. Checkpoint security firm found 36 devices with I'm going to use their wording here. The Checkpoint Mobile Threat Prevention has recently detected a severe infection in 36 Android devices belonging to a large telecommunications company and a multinational technology company.
Which, what, like hepatitis C or something?
Yeah, something like that. It's anyway, it's phones from Samsung, several phones from Samsung, a couple phones from LG, phones from Asus, Lenovo, although, you know, who knew that Lenovo was making phones, but whatever. ZTE, Oppo, which I don't really think they do much here in the States, and Xiaomi. 36 phones from these companies have malware that was put on the phones in the supply chain. In the freaking supply chain, Jeff.
So this means that you'd pick up a phone at your store that you like to pick up phones at and take the... I crack me up sometimes. Take the shrink wrap off, and your phone would already have malware on it. You hadn't even turned it on yet.
He hadn't even turned it on and visited a malicious site or downloaded a crappy piece of software from Google Play or some other third-party store.
Holy crap, that's insane.
Out of the box, malware. And some of the malware... I forgot to mute my phone. Muted everything else, but didn't mute my phone. My watch. some of it is was adware, adnets. Some of it was, you know, where they're like showing ads on your phones or hijacking ad space on websites. Some of it was ransomware. Can you imagine?
Holy crap.
You buy a phone and there's ransomware pre-installed on it from the supply. This wasn't Samsung putting malware on the phone, right? And it wasn't happening. I don't know when it was happening, but
so they found 30 something phones, almost 40 phones.
Yes, 36.
Okay, 36 phones. Those are just the ones they found. How many phones are people getting that were already infected and they didn't know? Like, they just assumed all those ads they see all over the phone are supposed to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? No way of knowing if this is a comprehensive list or the tip of the iceberg. I mean, there's no evidence either way. And I don't, you know, I'm not familiar enough with their methodology to know if there are additional phones that are out there. I mean, these are plenty. This is plenty of phones with this happening. And my favorite here is some of the devices that came with Loki, or Loki, depending on how you want to pronounce it, malware. This is a suite of malware that some of it is stealing your personal information.
Jeez.
Some of it is adware. And some of it is, this complex malware operates by using several different components. Each has its own functionality and role in achieving the malware's malicious goal. The malware displays illegitimate advertisements to generate revenue. As part of its operation, the malware steals data about the device and installs itself to the system, allowing it to take full control of the device and achieve persistency.
Seriously?
Yeah. So in some cases, this malware can't be done away with unless the phone is flashed, which is like
which the average completely person isn't going to do.
What the average person is not going to do? Yeah. 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 And I mean, this is like, in my never humble opinion, this is an indictment on Android, and this is an indictment against the OEM system as a whole.
You know, this isn't new, though. It might be new for Android, but this isn't new. Do you remember all the trouble people had buying OEM PCs back in earlier Windows days, where the PCs would show up at your house and they had malware pre-installed?
Malware or just sideloaded software?
Both. Yeah.
No, I don't remember. It's Filosun.
Okay. So, that's it right there. It used to be that people were buying PCs, like, sometimes even in stores, but a lot of the OEM stuff where you're buying a beige box that's built to order, and what you'd get is a computer that it would show up, and the Windows installation had malware on it already, and it typically wasn't even the device or the manufacturer that was doing this. It's that the copies of the legitimate copies of Windows that they had to install were already infected with malware, and if they were adding on sideware stuff, in many cases that had malware in it already. So you take the PC out of the box, set it up, and you never had a chance to have a computer that wasn't infected, because that's how it came. And then if you go and reinstall your copy of Windows that came with it, the copy of Windows may have had malware in that. And so you couldn't even install a clean operating system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough. And I did, the more you were speaking, the more I did remember this. Guiduck on our article about this. I like
that you're saying his name correctly.
Yeah, finally. How many times have I mispronounced it, though?
That's why I'm giving you positive reinforcement. Well done, Brian.
Oh, thank you.
He was, did you hear that?
I did.
That's exactly why I put a shockproof case on my iPhone.
Excellent. Nicely done. He was saying that, you know, before we get all cocky about this, how do we know this couldn't happen to Apple devices? And I'm not going to say that Apple devices are immune to this, but the way Apple does iOS with only running signed code makes this substantially more unlikely. A device could be jailbroken somewhere in the supply chain, theoretically.
Yes.
But then, but first of all, jailbreaking is becoming ever harder and harder.
You could also use provisioning. So, use a corporate code. So, because you can sideload apps onto your iPhone right now. But the process, right, it would take a lot of work because you'd have to take each of these phones and
but provisioning won't run unsigned code though.
Right.
It still would bypass that.
Right. But you can use the developer's authentication code and load this stuff on, but as soon as Apple knows it's there, they revoke the code and it stops working.
Right. And even if the device was jailbroken by someone in the supply chain, the first update that it ran would break the jailbreaking.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, Apple does have a lot of protections in place to prevent this sort of thing. Not to mention the fact that Apple has a chokehold on its own supply chain, much more so than the vast majority of companies, probably every other company in the electronics industry.
Yeah, and my guess is that Foxconn does not want to mess that up. So
no. Well, I mean, you know, still someone could get up to shenanigans, but so far we certainly don't have any reports of that happening. And you know that that's the sort of thing that would make headlines around the world. iPhones shipping with malware. I mean, that would,
oh yeah,
like everybody would trip over their man parts to rush to make to print that story.
Hats.
Yes. They're man part hats.
Yes.
I think it's called a condom. So, anyway, Android sucks balls. that's what this comes down to. It's what this comes down to.
So this is a serious problem. My guess is that the device makers are now, of course, going to watch closer, but or more closely. But ultimately, considering how many places along the way where you can add to an Android device without needing special authentication.
Yep.
You know, like a developer's ID.
Right. And you know, things could be put onto the ROM.
Yeah, that's true.
And here's a big part of this. When your entire business model is predicated on selling cheaper than everybody else, and you're operating on razor thin margins, it makes it a lot harder to control things like the manufacturing process. To wit, there are 36 Android devices out there that are coming pre-installed with malware. It infuriates me that this piece of crap is out there and that people buy it.
All right, so this isn't going to bring an end to the Android phone market. So, I mean, really, what are these companies going to do to stop this? And I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, they can watch their supply chains more closely. They can.
There's no money. There's no money in that. There's no money in that.
No, of course
unless this is going to have a negative impact on sales, and it's not, because the only people who are going to pay attention to this are the echo chamber, the tech echo chamber, right? And battle lines are already drawn in the tech. I mean, this it's not going to change anything. It's just Android's going to keep being a piece of crap.
It didn't change anything during the Mac Windows wars.
No, not at all. Well, it kind of did. Actually, you could argue that part of why Apple was eventually able to grow Mac market share and Mac sales was its successful advertising on not being subject to PC viruses. That played a role.
Yeah, sure.
It wasn't responsible for all of it. There's the halo effect from first the iPod and then the iPhone. There's multiple advertising campaigns that were very successful. There's the mere fact that Apple changed the rules by which it was competing in the PC space by competing on style and experience rather than price. But part of that overall equation was the fact that Macs weren't subject to PC viruses, and that Apple was building OS X out of the gate to be much more secure than Windows was. And that did have an effect on some people who bought Macs. So, I don't know. It played a role.
So to an extent, this will probably play a small role in some people choosing iPhone over an Android phone. But my guess is that by and large, most Android phone users won't even hear about this problem.
No, and Android device users, the vast majority of them, are unaware that. I mean, let me rephrase that. Android device owners with compromised devices tend to be unaware that their devices are compromised.
Yeah, true. This was a serious issue on Windows. The Windows users had no idea. Yeah.
So, I'd love to see Apple do like a commercial with Jeff Goldblum. Get an Android phone. Step one. Open it up. Look for malware. Step two, there is no step two. I don't know. This was not a very well conceived idea by me, but
step one, buy your Android phone. Step two, turn it on and look for malware. There is no step three.
Yeah.
It's still a really rough idea, but I think we're fleshing it out just a little bit.
Well, yeah, we'll have to pitch Apple and Jeff Goldblum later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. And it's,
maybe we could get Richard Dreyfuss in on this. Here's to the ball sucking malware.
Here's to the crazy ones who buy Android. They're just crazy.
You know, if you're someone that is technologically savvy enough to be able to look for this sort of thing and fix this sort of thing, it's the sort of thing that would annoy you. It's like, I can't believe my phone came that way, but then you'd fix it. But that's not what most people that are buying Android phones do. They're buying it because they got it for cheap. That's probably for a lot of people. It was just cheaper.
It's cheaper, or you know, there are people who like that it's open. Who don't find value in Apple's walled garden. People who just hate Apple. Mm-hmm.
They're not going to be aware of these problems, or what to do, even if they find them.
Yeah, we had someone ask, Lee Dronick asked, that his friend of his was asking him how to check. And I don't know. Screw it. Screw Android. I have no idea.
I know there are malware checking apps for Android.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, because they're necessary.
Right. So then the thing is the malware sophisticated enough to hide itself from the detectors?
Right. Yeah, I don't. But our point is we don't really have any advice for anyone on how to actually deal with this. And we have listeners who may have an Android device from work. Oh, and we may even have listeners who have an Android device because they want to.
That's true. Yeah. And, you know, it's in many cases, flashing the device and starting it from factory settings may fix the problem, but that's not a guarantee. And a lot of people, they don't know how to do that either. But if this, but if it's malware that was able to access all of your personal data, well, it's already been snarfed up and taken. So
yeah.
So at that point, what you're doing is preventing further data theft. But your contacts, your emails, your text messages, all that stuff will probably have already been copied. So, yay, Android malware.
Yay, Android malware. All right, I want to go to a happier place.
Okay.
I want to go to a happy place of soothing images, pouring colors, fluffy clouds, places with soothing sensations and rituals and things where I'm not all cranky.
I've been to a couple parties like that.
All right. Okay, so I know this is not really Apple or tech related, but
you're using Apple technology to share.
I'm using Apple technology to share, but that's so thin. That's so incredibly thin. Anyway, here's the deal. I think we've mentioned that that I've been using fountain pens lately.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've mentioned that on the show.
I don't know if we've mentioned it on the show. It's something we've definitely discussed. So buddy, just in case, hey, Brian's been using fountain pens lately.
Yeah, I have been. A buddy of mine who is a calligrapher has been spending the last 2 years learning how to be a polygrapher.
Whoa, that was close. Wow. I think that how many pens does he have?
He makes naughty movies with many wives. Polygrapher. He's a calligrapher. Polygrapher. Anyway, all right, he's a calligrapher, and he's quite good, and as part of becoming a calligrapher, he's become a fountain pen enthusiast. Mm-hmm. And as part of being a fountain pen, he's kind of like me. When he gets really into something, he wants to get all his buddies into it. Mm-hmm. And so that fracker gave me a dip pen, like a pen that you stick a nib on the end of it, and then you dip the thing into an inkwell like it's 1920.
Right. So the kind of pen that I would pantomime using when I do the voice when I'm dictating a letter to your dearest Matilda.
Yes, exactly. Updating her on the status of dysentery and the cholera.
Yes, that would be
in the camp. My dearest Matilda.
That would be it.
Yeah, yes. Go ahead. Do you want me to do it?
Oh, my dearest Matilda, the dysentery is much worse this week with three of my lieutenants dropping like flies. Yours, B.
I'm providing the scratching effects.
I know. It was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I know someone who loves your voice there on that.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, if I need to dictate a special letter for whoever that is, just let me know.
Okay. I will holler. So anyway, he gave me this dip pen and I wrote a couple of letters using this dip pen and it was just a fantastic experience. And then he ended up showing me this Parker 50, a pen from the 1960s, the one that he showed me, mm-hmm. that is just, it's a fountain pen, not a dip pen. And it's just glorious. It's just glorious. It looks so incredibly, it looks so space agey.
Yeah, there's some really cool pens from that era.
I am admiring it now. And in the process of writing letters with these devices, with these antiquated, anachronistic pens, I ended up stumbling back into sealing wax. And that's S-E-A-L-I-N-G, not C-E-I-L-I-N-G.
Now, first two things here. Growing up, I always thought it was a type of polish for the ceiling in your room.
Sure.
Because no one, I never had ceiling contacts. Wax.
Yeah.
But then the second thing, you said you fell back to that, or went back to that. So you had played with ceiling wax in the past?
Yeah. You know, my older sister had this Hallmark set from the Hallmark gift stores. Uh-huh. It was a Hallmark set of 26 letters and the Zodiac, because, you know, 1970s.
Oh, yes.
And it may have had numbers too, but I can't remember. And it was like, you know, so you had this. I ended up writing a blog post over at Geek Tales about this. And I was able to find an example of a single letter from a Hallmark set. I couldn't find an example of the whole kit, which, you know, which had a box, and, you know, every seal had its own little circle that it would sit in. And it was this this round wooden dowel for a handle and all these different replaceable heads for the individual seals. And
did she write out whole words with sealing wax?
No.
I mean, because if you have the whole alphabet, someone did it. And then afterwards, they had a brief moment where they thought, that is so cool, I did this. And then later on, we're like, what was I thinking?
Yeah, I doubt that anyone ever actually did that.
It would be a very short letter.
It would be. And the quality of those stamps was just not good, especially compared to what's out there today. But here's the thing. There is this like big resurgence in this. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, there are all kinds of brand new companies making sealing wax stamps. And there are several companies making their own sealing wax. And it's rather interesting to me, and the thing that I have found is that it is fun to do these seals, and like I want to write letters so that I can seal them.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be a bit ass backwards,
but
anything that gets me writing letter, a real letter, a real handwritten letter. Most people find those to be a treat.
Yeah, it's not like, well, geez, not that long ago, geologically speaking, where that was just the routine. But now, getting a handwritten letter from someone, that just doesn't happen. So
yeah, it does. It doesn't happen.
So handwritten letter with your own personal wax seal on it. Oh my God. That, yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny you say your own personal one. Of course you can, you know, the vast majority of people who are into this. And I got to tell you, I did a video of me pouring a seal and then, painting the seal with a paint pen that thing's gotten 45,000 views.
I watched it. It was cool.
Well, thank you. My point there is simply that there are a lot of folks who are seemingly into this or rediscovering it or discovering it anew. I've seen a lot of young people who seem to be into it. So, you know, people definitely who did not grow up with a sealing wax or writing letters by hand. And there was a calligrapher woman on Instagram. Her name is, her Instagram handle is, I think, Moyography.
Okay.
Stick a link in the show notes to her Instagram handle. She's an excellent calligrapher. And she has a wax pour that had 292,000 views. I mean, just a lot of people find this pleasant to watch. And here's the thing. Like, I've also found that because of the way I work, when I get into something, I definitely want to, like, show everybody and get other people into it. And a lot of people that I know personally have gotten the same bug that I have just from seeing, you know, my pictures of seals that I've made, or the videos of seals that I've made, or even receiving a letter from me with a seal on it. And it's, I don't know, it's lots of fun. And it's such a throwback. It's so unnecessary. I mean, like, the post office charges you 21 extra cents.
Seriously?
If your letter has a seal, not only on the outside, they're going to charge you 21 cents. But if they know that your letter has a seal on the inside, they're going to charge you 21 cents extra.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because it messes with the machines. It messes with the machines that are processing these things. So, you know, here you've got this legacy service, the U.S. Postal Service.
Uh-huh.
Right, using machinery, the modern machinery that can't deal with legacy technology of seals. So they're going to charge you 21 extra cents. The point is that this stuff isn't necessary, but it seems to be a lot of fun. And like, there's several companies that'll make a seal for you if you actually upload a custom design.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they'll make your own custom seal. So like, if your family has a family crest, you know, you could get a seal made from that. Or if you know, for and like what a lot of people are doing, I think a lot of the interest in sealing wax and calligraphy is coming from the wedding industry.
Sure. That, yeah, I can totally see that.
Yeah. People certainly love the idea of having their wedding invitations sealed with wax. And then also a lot of people are using sealing wax to, seal packages.
Oh, packages. Okay.
Yeah. So they'll wrap a package with twine and then seal that twine with a wax. It's very decorative and lovely.
Yeah, that's cool. That's how my bourbon bottle shows up. Dipped in wax.
Yeah, right.
Excuse me, my podcasting juice.
Your podcasting juice, right. Maker's Mark.
Right. Yep, that's my house bourbon for podcasting.
Right. So anyway, it's all interesting, and it's lovely, and there's a lot of really lovely waxes out there. There's just really gorgeous colors, and you know, a lot of people are doing fun things with marbling different colors together, and you know, brushing a stamp from an ink pad to highlight the design. Or what I've been doing is using paint pens to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's fun. And I know it's a throwback technology. I know it doesn't have anything to do with Apple. It doesn't really have anything to do with technology. It's anti-technology, but I love anachronistic things a lot.
Well, it is technology. It's just very antiquated technology. So let's say that I decided I wanted to get into sealing wax. Mm-hmm. Where would be a good place to start? Is there like a kit, a starter kit that you can pick up to get you going?
Yeah, you can like, Amazon has got a ton of cheap little kits. And the kits might have just a stamp and a couple of waxes a couple of sticks of wax. And the way you can do sealing wax currently, you can get a stick of wax with a wick in it, right? And that's how I was doing it back in the 70s as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, it's like almost like a little candle, and you light the wick and then drip the wax onto your envelope to seal it.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Or you can do what I prefer doing is using a spoon to melt the wax. And you could actually cut a wicked stick to do that. Or you could buy a stick that is designed to be cut into small chunks. Or you can do what I've been doing. I got wax beads from a company called Back to Zero. Mm-hmm. And I think they make some gorgeous stamps. Their machining process is excellent. The sharpness of their designs is just outstanding. But they sell wax beads. And so you can control precisely how much wax you're going to have in your spoon. And the reason why I like the spoons is because I can pour exactly how much I want and don't have to worry about the slow drip rate from a stick that's slowly dripping onto my paper.
So you have more control over the wax.
So you got more control over the wax. But yeah, if someone wanted to revisit or visit a new or visit brand new, the concept of writing letters and sealing them with wax, you could buy a cheap kit from Amazon.
And
cheap
kits on galore
on eBay. No, you don't. No. Candle wax is not a good sealing wax. A sealing wax is designed specifically to adhere and to break once you open it. I mean, it's the whole point is to actually verify that something was sealed. I mean, that's what it goes back to. Mm-hmm. Goes back to people with authority basically signing a document with a signet ring. Mm-hmm. Or some kind of signet to verify its authenticity. And you know, that's going back, you know, millennium. Weeks. It's going back weeks, yeah. But so anyway, there's a lot of different places to do it. If anyone has a question, they can ask me. I know that our longtime listener, Rick Allen, ended up buying wax and a seal from Back to Zero after seeing me talk about it.
That's really cool.
Yeah. He let me know today that his stuff had shipped from Back to Zero. They're a Hong Kong company, small company in Hong Kong, so it takes a while to actually get your stuff.
But it's good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have really good stuff. Really good stuff. But there are other great companies, too. I know the calligraphers use a wax brand called Atelier Gargoyle. It's like $6.60 a stick. It's expensive.
But it's really good stuff.
Supposedly. Yep. Supposedly it's really, really good. I haven't used it myself yet. I intend to, though. All right. So, yeah, lots of fun. I've got a blog post on this. My Instagram feed at GeekTales has some stuff I've been doing recently. We can stick a note in the a link in the show notes to Back to Zero.
Oh, cool. Yes, good idea.
Yeah, maybe I'll actually stick something in there to Amazon, too.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. For those people that are now interested and just want to get a whole kit to get them going.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. We'll do that.
Cool. That sounds awesome.
I've seen some lovely Harry Potter branded.
Oh, things. I bet. And I bet there's a lot of people that would love to do wax sealing.
Yeah. With that. You can do a wax seal for Hogwarts or for any of the four houses, Slytherin, Gryffindor, Ravenclaw, or Hufflepuff. Mm-hmm. And those are actually lovely looking seals for whatever that's worth.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. So, listeners, if you know, assuming you didn't tune us out because we're not talking about technology, I'd love to know what you think.
Yeah, I'm curious if anyone else is doing any sealing wax stuff. I am not, but I'm really enjoying it vicariously through you.
Yeah, fair enough. But you know, like I said, man, the thing is that it gets me writing letters. I wrote a letter to my mom. I haven't written a letter to my mom in a long time.
And if my mom saw a letter show up in the mail for me, and I talk to my mom all the time, but if she saw a letter show up in the mail, she'd probably have another mini stroke thinking, oh my God, what's wrong?
Yeah. My mother loved getting her letter. And I know that she also has been infected. She has ordered some wax and a stamp for herself.
So it runs in the family. So,
Yep, and the same thing with my older sister. She's all plotting on how to do Christmas packages this year, sealed with wax.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's just a lot of fun. All right, we have another topic. What was the other topic?
The really old Apple computer. As long as we're talking about antiquated technology.
Yeah, and anachronisms. Team Brecker, or I don't know how they pronounce it, but it's a German auction house. They do you remember back in 2013?
Yes, back in 2013 when Epson released their first dot matrix papyrus printer.
Exactly. 2013, there were a couple of Apple ones, functioning Apple ones that were sold. I think one of them went for $400,000 or something like that.
Yeah. It was a crazy amount of money. Weren't there a couple Apple ones in the past year that were sold as well? Not nearly much money.
There have been a couple of them. So the Apple One was that first computer that Steve Wozniak built that Steve Jobs said, hey, we can sell that. Right. Back when there were no personal computers. No such thing as a personal computer.
So
it was a kit, right. It was a motherboard. And it was up to you to supply some kind of a monitor. And a keyboard and a case. Yeah.
Did it come with a power supply?
I don't know. I don't remember what came with the original one. It came with some manuals with that Isaac Newton based logo, that first logo.
Yeah. Sitting under the
Apple head. Yeah. Yeah. Really complicated. Or did they commission that? I forget.
I don't know.
I can't remember who designed that, to be honest. And it's not like we prep for the show.
Well, we have everything prepped, but we put it in an envelope and then you sealed it and it looks so beautiful we won't open it. So
exactly.
We don't have any of our notes.
Exactly. But it didn't come with any kind of display, but it was designed to work with the display. I think it would actually work with a TV even. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there were 200 of them made, and there are only 60 known to still exist. I suspect that there are a couple of more gathering dust in attics somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet. They're slowly trickling out.
Right. They're crumbling in a basement or stuck away in an attic, and the rest of them have been thrown away. And of those 60 that are known to exist, 8 of them run, I think. Is it 8 or 6?
Regardless.
Eight are known to still operate.
Okay, so when was this computer initially released?
76.
So we're talking about computers that are 40 years old.
Apple
is that right?
One. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, 40 years old. 40 years old. Yeah, 76. That's one that was released, and they're all built by Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs and a couple of folks who they brought in to help hand wire these things.
That's true. They were all handmade.
They were all handmade. They were hand populated motherboards, and it's a work of genius by Steve Wozniak. Just an absolute work of genius. Yeah. And selling it was a work of genius by Steve Jobs.
This is why they made such a good team.
This was why, for a while at least. And right. So, like I said, there's 8 of these things that still run, and it is just fascinating that there are even 8 that still run. That was a point that John Keat made in that little chat group that he's got, that tech chat group that he's got. We've mentioned that a couple times, but he noted, where is that?
See, the great thing is we're totally prepared for this show.
Yeah, totally. Totally. We're always prepared. There's the tech group. He said, It's a 40-year-old computer. It still works. I wonder if all the capacitors have been replaced on it. He noted that his 6-year-old Mac Pro's capacitors are starting to go. But it's remarkable that there are any of these things that still run. And of course, you know, people have a vested interest in actually taking care of the ones that still exist, because they do regularly go for hundreds of thousands of dollars when they sell, because people are interested in owning this piece of history. And Team Brecker sold those two back in 2013. Mm-hmm. And they've got this one, they call it the best preserved specimen. Best preserved example of an Apple One. I don't really know that that's true. Team Brecker does tend to be a little bit glowing when it comes to describing its auctions.
Yeah, well, whoever bought the one a couple years ago for over $400,000, I bet they're looking closely at this one to see if they paid too much for theirs.
Well, you know, each one of that's the interesting thing, is that each one of them is a little bit different. I'm pulling up the one that sold in April of 2013 had what did it have? It had original documentation. Some of them don't have documentation. One of them came with a motherboard signed by Steve Wozniak, and that's obviously that's special, right? I mean,
yeah. That's even more some special of them, than my special edition 2GS that has Woz autograph on the front of it.
Yeah, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Some of them have displays from that era. Some of them don't. Some of them have cassette drives from that era. Some of them don't. Some of them have the boxes that were made for them by hand, like wooden boxes that were made. So yeah. Like each auction is entirely unique, because there's only, you know, there's only 60 of these things that still exist, and only 8 of those that still run. So, there's probably kind of an apples and oranges comparison, but you know, and the value of this sort of thing is always going to go up and down.
Of course.
The tech world is flush with money right now. A lot of very, very wealthy people.
So it'll go for more.
Potentially. Yeah. Well, Team Brecker is estimating that this one will go for $325.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, but it wouldn't be a record if it did.
Yeah, but still, when you think about how much that computer cost initially, $666.
Right. Right. Wow. Yeah, it's a slight appreciation. By the way, this one also comes with a letter from Apple declining a request to upgrade it to an Apple II.
No kidding.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if the person who is selling it is the person who made that request, but it turns out that if it is that same person, it turns out it probably was better for them, because they're about to have, you know, after the auction house fees, they're about to have a couple hundred thousand dollars in their pocket.
No kidding. That's cool though.
Yeah, it is. It's cool. It's interesting that, I mean, like, we don't, I have actually seen a couple of auctions for the, what was that? What was the computer with the switches? The other home computer.
They all have switches.
No, yeah, but all it had was switches. You interacted with it with switches.
Oh, it's the blue one. I can picture it in my head. How funny. Yeah. I can't think of the name.
Topman.
S something. Well, there are several listeners right now that are yelling at whatever their device is that they're listening on.
Yeah, you're so close. It's the Altair 8800.
Altair 8800, where there's not a single S involved.
not a single S.
This is why all. Everyone is yelling at their devices. They're like, no, Jeff, no, there's no S in Altair.
Anyway, you know, I've seen some of those sell the come up for auction. Those don't go for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
No. Well, the ones that had the S in the name. you know, where it was done in the original Elvin. Those went for a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting. It's interesting. This Apple legacy effect and the legacy of Steve Jobs and to rightly or wrongly to a lesser extent, the legacy of Steve Wozniak.
Yeah.
And to me, the Apple one really is much more about the Apple one and the Apple two are much more about Steve Wozniak's genius than Steve Jobs. Although again, Steve Jobs was a genius to be able to sell this thing.
Yes.
To be sure. Was. But being able, I mean, Steve Wozniak designed and made computers that worked by himself.
Yeah, he did. And he'd sit there and look at chips and he'd be like, which chips can I take out and still have it do everything it's supposed to do?
Yeah, that's just crazy stuff.
It was beyond incredible science and engineering and became an art for him.
Right. Right. So, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting to see this happen. It'll be interesting to see what it goes for. I think it's being sold on March 28th. Is that correct? Let me see here. Top Men. Well, I didn't actually include, the date in my piece. So that's really professional.
Sweet.
I think, but I meant to.
Well, okay. It's the thought that counts.
So I'm going to figure this out after we finish recording, and I'm going to update the article to include the date.
Okay.
And, but I think it's March 28th. That this thing will be selling for. Cool. Nope. See, there you go. March 20. Yeah, I can't remember.
That's the sauce happening right there.
Yeah, I'll figure it out. So there you have it, folks. Anachronisms, antiquated technologies, and Android. So I guess three of the same things. Yeah, we could try to sing one of these things just doesn't belong here, but it turns out they all belong.
They all belong.
Well, except for two of the three are fun, and one of the three is not.
And we're not going to say which, so you guys can decide what Brian means.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, well, there we go. I think we have a show.
Amazingly, yes, we do. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
Hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.